This is On and Off Your Mat Podcast, episode 219, Understanding Grief to Navigate It More Easily. Grief is part of the human experience, yet it's something that we are personally and as a society very uncomfortable with. We try to hide it and we try to avoid it altogether. If you've experienced grief or you dread the day that you'll have to deal with it, this episode is for you. For today's episode, I sat down with Shweta Vikram. Shweta is a dedicated doctor of Ayurveda, a globally renowned speaker, and an acclaimed author of 14 best-selling books. The goal of her work is to alleviate stress and elevate overall quality of her clients' lives through Ayurveda-based health and wellness coaching. She specializes in addressing disordered sleep, anxiety, digestion, appetite, and mood. With a master's degree in strategic communication from Columbia University and a postgraduate degree in sport nutrition, she applies her expansive knowledge to shape her approach. Her upcoming book, The Loss That Binds Us, is set to release in April 2024, so this month, by publisher Loving Healing Press, and is a heartfelt guide through grief and is now available in pre-order if you can't wait. Her impactful work has been featured in renowned publications, including the New York Times, NBC, as well as a documentary collaboration with Dr. Deepak Chopra. Together, we talked about grief and how it's seen through the lens of Ayurveda, the six, not only five stages of grief, why we want to turn away from it, and how we can navigate it with a bit more grace for ourselves. If this episode inspires you in any way, share it and help someone else on their journey towards staying connected in the loss while taking care of themselves and honoring their loved one. I really always love to read your takeaways on the episode. So take a screenshot of the episode and share something you've learned or something that was impactful for you. And make sure to tag at On and Off Your Mat Podcast or erica.belanger on Instagram. And I'll be happy to see that and reshare you. All right, if you're ready to jump into today's episode, let's go. It's going to be a good one. Hi, Shweta.
Hi, Erica. It's so nice to be here.
I'm so glad that we're sitting down today to talk about it. Thank you so much for joining me.
Completely my pleasure. And I don't say that lightly because it's an important topic that's not enough discussed or spoken about. And conversations like these help so many people.
I agree. Before we dive in our topic of today, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey? What led you today to talk about this and write the book that you did?
Sure. So I'll give like a 5-second official spiel of what I do and then the informal bit. So I'm an Ayurvedic doctor, I'm a speaker, and The Loss That Binds Us is my 14th book. And the basic idea is I help people thrive on their own terms by living a healthy and mindful life without excessive boundaries. Because the minute we put in too much rigidity, you know, it's not sustainable. And if our mental and emotional well-being is in place, a lot of us can show up and a lot of pieces of us, a lot of aspects of us can show up. And I think that's why it's very important for me to lead a life and to help others lead a life, whatever boundaries mean to them, whatever rigidity means to them. Like, look at that, but develop a healthy relationship instead of one that is obsessive or hurtful.
Yeah, that is not an easy task.
You know, you burn and you learn. And that's been my philosophy. I've made the mistakes. So whatever I talk about, it comes from the place of my experience. Some people might be able to relate to it. Somebody might find, you know, their answers in another person. But I just want healing in this world. That's where I am at today. So, yeah.
I agree. And I see life the same way. And my great grandma used to say, when you're born, you learn, like you just say. And when you've learned the lessons you were supposed to learn, you die. That was her definition of life. It's like, you're here to learn. When you've learned what you needed to, you go. And it's like, next chapter.
Wow, that is profound. Hopefully you have a lot of learning to do and a long way ahead, but yeah, that's powerful. And I think I'm a big believer in, you know, mistakes can become teachers if we look at them as experience instead of berating ourselves. And, you know, the kindness and compassion, if you have it towards yourself, you will have it towards others as well. But if we expect that perfection and are rigid about this is how I see life, this is what tomorrow should be, you know, there is a lack of love. There's a lack of self-love. And how can you love others if you don't really love yourself truly?
You mentioned the 14th book that you wrote. First of all, congrats on all these books. That is quite a feat. The love that binds us. Why did you write this particular book? Why was it important to talk about grief and grief in this way?
Sure. So The Loss That Binds Us, 108 Tips on Coping with Grief and Loss. I wrote this, I'll be candid and vulnerable here, in May of 2023. Unexpectedly, we lost my father and 2 days later, my father-in-law. And they both lived in India. So shuttling between two continents, and they lived in two different cities, 3 hours away, I almost felt like the toll places and on the highway had my picture up there because I was alternating. And, you know, my brother and his family were there. My husband was there, obviously, and his sister was there. But, you know, shuttling between two cities, not knowing what was happening, not really tired because the mind was so wide. You know, we all survive on adrenaline when we need to. But when everything happened and we'd done the cremation, and believe it or not, all of this is happening around my mom's 9th death anniversary. So cremating one, attending one's funeral, doing the last rites for another one, honoring mom's 9th death anniversary, it just felt like a horror film. Everyone who heard it was like, what are you talking about? You're making this up. I was like, why would anyone make this up? But I think because it was so surreal, people just couldn't believe. And then, you know, in retrospect, like I was tired to the bones. I was also a cross-continental caregiver for about a year, year and a half. There was no manual there to navigate grief. You know, there are a lot of beautiful, profound books about people's experiences, but that's reflective. Where is that reactive piece? So I pardon my friend, but like when shit hits the fan, who do I turn to?
Now what?
Now what? Everyone around me was grieving. I couldn't turn to my husband. He was grieving his dad. I couldn't turn to my brother. It just felt like there's so many things that the world that we live in, the culture, the global culture that we live in, people don't want to talk about grief. And I'm not saying it's make it a dinner party conversation, but that's a part of life. You know, death touches each and every one of us. And just by not addressing it, you're not equipping yourself with something that is going to hit you today or whenever, right? I don't mean literally today, God forbid.
But no one is immune to grief. Like it's part of the human experience.
Yeah, you're so right. And also when I think of it, grief is not just the death of a loved one. Grief is the loss of a relationship, a job, an opportunity. I've been talking to chronic illness survivors. And I had a conversation even earlier today. The one thing they all had in common was I lost her at a year. I lost her 2 months. I lost her 2 years. And no one acknowledges that grief because it was invisible. You know, chronic illnesses often are. So yeah. You've lost out on all this time.
And even your loss of identity in that, like who you are, because it becomes so defining and so limiting sometimes in what you're able to achieve and do that it changes your self-definition. And like you need to grieve the life you thought you would have. You know, there's also this whole aspect, like the dreams and aspiration that are not available anymore.
Oh, I love that. That is profound. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, again, like the world we live in where we focus on, yes, I am a raging optimist and I believe in the good and talking about the good, but you can only get there when you've dealt with the negative. You know, grief brings out sides to us even we didn't know existed with it. Then you're wondering, am I just this horrible person? So here you're dealing with grief and then wondering like, am I really that awful? I didn't even know this existed. And I'm like, no, it's part of grieving. Accept it. That's what who you are in the moment. You know, that's not the definition of who you are. And I love the piece that you said about identity. In my case, you know, I'm a woman in my 40s who's lost both her parents. So what is my identity now? Like, is it the older generation? Because I know people who are in the 60s and knock on wood, both their parents are alive. So now am I representing their parents' generation? Because there's no one above me. So it's not just my loss of identity in terms with India, the land of my ancestors. Like I'm a foreigner there. When you think of it, when I land, who really cares? I mean, there are people who care, but you know, your parents are something else.
I mean, you're not a daughter anymore.
Right. So that aspect is gone. You know, when I became an Ayurvedic doctor, I picked up the phone to call and I was very close to my dad. I picked up the phone and I'm like, oh, I can't share the news. And you know, people say, and I say this too, you know, talk to the photograph and all that. But there's sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, just shut up. You don't get it. Like talk to a photograph. I want to talk to a real person. So yeah. There is also the anger of around that loss, not just the anger that they're gone, but everything that they are missing out and everything you as a griever, you're missing out on.
There's almost like a sense of betrayal from life.
Yes.
Of like that unfairness and that like, why, you know, disbelieve like this whole aspect of grief too.
And I think it sends you into a spiral. It starts
100%.
You know, like, why us? Why my family? Then it goes to, oh, that jerk is still around. Why not them? I mean, we all have those thoughts. Then you move from that and then you come to the sense of betrayal. And then it leads to that point of, you know, when I hear the older generation talking about mortality, I'm like, I am talking about it too. Because again, the emotional roof over my head is gone. So I don't know what generation I belong to. So yeah, there were so many reasons why I wanted to talk about, you know, grief and loss and how to honor the people, but also how to honor yourself. And it's not have that hierarchy or come, especially, God forbid, anyone has to deal with what my family went through, you know, like grieving two people at the same time. With my husband and I, we set these boundaries. And I was like, you know, we take out time every day to honor our dads. And he was in agreement. I was like, and you share your suggestions, but there needs to be no comparison. There needs to be no hierarchy. And at the same time, we both shared a relationship with our father-in-laws. For instance, if he said, you know, this is what I miss about your dad, it's not my place to say, huh, if you miss, can you imagine he was my dad? No comparison on any level.
Competition of who's grieving better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people are external processors, some are internal processors. So just honoring everybody is dealing with their own stuff. And I really believe grief turns everybody into a monster. And I use that frivolously because it brings out sides to you that you didn't know existed. Just hold space because it also knows when to go away. You've just been hit with so much and the pressure is be positive. Oh, show up. Do this. Do that.
Yeah. Don't break down.
I know. In fact, I was on a panel last week. One of the things we talked about was grief in the workplace.
There's no space for it.
There's no space. We talk about maternity leave, but we don't talk about women going through menopause in the workplace and what they're dealing with, mental health again. And a lot of my work is around mental and emotional well-being. Same thing with grief. And don't quote me on this number, even though I'm Indian, math is not my forte. But I believe the US corporations endured like a $75 billion loss annually because of grieving workers.
Why are we so uncomfortable with grief?
I think we are uncomfortable talking with anything which is not rosy.
And grief is the least of it. Like,
exactly. But people don't realize, like, when you get to the other end of the spectrum, and, you know, as I define myself as a storytelling Ayurvedic doctor, there are always stories that connect us to people, even in healing, right? And so when one client shared, and, you know, he's okay with me sharing this aspect, that he felt ghosted by his closest friends when he lost somebody close to him because they thought his grief was contagious. So it's also not that, that they don't want to deal with it. They think like, oh, you've gone through it. It might be bad luck. Bad omen might touch me now. So there is also that aspect. Yeah.
Not even just like your vibrational, you know, self right now is contagious on me, but like the fact that you've gone through this might bring bad, you know, things in my life.
Right. And this is not a small town. This is in a big city in the US where this incident happened. Yeah. And it goes back to that concept of fear, where I personally think the contagious bit that they talk about is like, if I talk about it, then I have to start thinking about this could happen to my family. And denial is a form of survival.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, I guess it confronts people to their own mortality, to the mortality of their loved ones, of how they will handle the grief. Like, and it's all things that they don't want to look at.
Oh, absolutely. And what they don't realize is having, you know, lost both of my parents, I grieve differently. Mm. You know, there was a 9-year gap, but also I've changed over the years. So it's time is one thing, we all evolve. And you start responding to situations. So, you know, our cerebral minds could say 5 checklists when I'm dealing with grief, and the emotional, you know, the heart.
I'll just throw a tantrum.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I don't want to deal with this.
I feel like before we go even deeper, we should define, like we've talked about like already what grief looks like, because it's not just that loss of a person. We talked about all those other lost. And for me, it's very similar to heartbreak as well. It's like, in grief, there's like this tone of heartbreak. How does Ayurveda sees grief?
So from an Ayurvedic perspective, there are 3 primary doshas, our constitution, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And I'll speak from a space of imbalance. And one of the many things that I love about Ayurveda is just breaks it down to the bare bones. So for someone who's experiencing high Vata imbalance, they'll get more anxious, nervousness, twitching, change in the digestion, like, and I'm speaking generally, right? Like constipation, these could be the symptoms. For someone who has a pitta imbalance, anger shows up. So you know why some people are like, I was angry, and some people was, I was just anxious and checking my partner or my child's breath in the middle of the night because I was anxious I would lose them. So pitta imbalance could look like, you know, like a lot of anger and stress and burnout and like short fuse. And from a kapha imbalance perspective, that's where the depression hits. So it's lack of motivation, not wanting to get out of the house, wanting to sit on the couch. I'll tell you, I'm a very high pitta person. And so I was extra productive. You know, since the two losses, I became an Ayurvedic doctor. I was towards completion. I completed a business program. I wrote this book. I've been building my business. And when I distance myself, that's a complete pitta response, pitta imbalance response. So I've been doing the mental stuff, you know, my pranayama, my yoga, Reiki.
For balancing pitta.
For balancing pitta, or even diet-wise, like, you know, I don't drink because right now I know I'm in that grief phase and alcohol will aggravate pitta. So it's been still manageable because I've been using those principles, but my mind, my healing came from overworking and literally overworking. And I remember in January, my husband and I were in Aruba and all I did was sleep. And I'm like this active person who loves the mountains, loves hiking. I just couldn't keep my eyes open. And I think that's when the body realized it could let go, you know. 8 months after all of this, I've been a doer. And so I just got into that autopilot robotic mode of doing, 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 because I didn't know how else to grieve. Like sitting and not doing anything is just not me. Also, from an Ayurvedic perspective, that's also a pitta imbalance. I needed a little, you know, kapha, that nurturing to do that. And so that's why I made it a point like to go for someone else's, attend someone else's yoga class. I might teach, but take someone else's class. Go for a sound healing, you know, different things for different people. Or go to a museum with a friend. Like, what am I taking in? And also, from an Ayurvedic perspective, like, mind is more where most of the diseases start, right? So is even grief out of proportion can be just that. So, like, if you take care of the mind, then it impacts how we process everything else.
Yeah. So basically the grief just aggravates the imbalance that is naturally there or you tend to have. And I love that perspective because it explains why partially it's so different in different people. It's like, what are you starting with in your own, you know, composition in the person you are? And that's going to influence how you're going to react.
Absolutely. And even while you're going through that grief period, you know, and the funeral rituals, however every family and culture does it, you realize some people just shut down and don't want to deal with anything. So I think that's the difference between, you know, when my mom passed away and between dad, like I'd spent a decade pursuing Ayurveda. So there was no judgment from my end. Why is this person not doing so and so? It's not them. It's the imbalance. And when you're going through that, whether it's anticipatory grief or something that you weren't expecting, lives are thrown apart. So, you know, your schedule is all over the place and everybody reacts differently to it. So I think Ayurveda also teaches you to be more compassionate towards and cognizant of other people's grieving journey as well as your own.
Yeah, because it gives you like a bigger picture perspective, mm-hmm. right? You can see different variation, different options, and it's easier to make sense and understand that this other person might not be acting and reacting the same way as you. And that makes sense because sometimes it's really hard to understand that someone is grieving differently than us. Like, not that our grief is better. Maybe sometimes people think that, but why are you not feeling XYZ or acting in this way? And that really helps you take a step back and be like, oh, well, we're not the same person, you know? And so I think that helps bring that compassion and understanding for sure.
And also in terms of, you know, as a griever, it's human nature to have expectations. And I recently ended up writing about this. Like, I know people who've ended their lifelong friendships because a person didn't show up, you know, when they were grieving. And my whole take on that, and be angry. Just be angry when you need to be angry. Don't shove that away. You know, and we have all these beautiful quotes, and I share that too. Always keep checking in on your grieving friends. Reality is everyone is grieving something, Erica.
Yeah.
And also people show up differently. You know, I had friends who were chatting with me from 2:30 a.m. to 5 because I used to not sleep nights. I used to stay up with my dad. Like, we knew he was going to go. And like, so anything that he was saying, I would just write it down because this is what we'd be left with. I had some friends who would stay up with me and chat with me. So, you know, just because they didn't show up to the funeral doesn't mean they don't care. They showed up when I needed them, and they also understand where I need them the most. So, you know, I think the other thing with Ayurveda is like the compassion, that's it just helps you be less judgmental and less demanding of other people, because adult life is so complicated.
Yeah.
A little bit more love is all we need.
Yeah. That's good. When we talk about grief, we often know like the typical 5 stages of grief. In the book, you talk about a 6th stage, which I love because it brought that idea that you were talking in the beginning of growing, learning, you know, and making something out of that. Can we talk about that a little bit and how we can explore that 6th stage and use it to bring even more meaning maybe to that loss?
Right. So even I fell in love with that 6th stage when I, you know, read about it, because I feel like grief is not linear. There's no chronological order. And again, going back to the Ayurveda, if you're a pitta imbalance, you might start with anger and be stuck in anger until you really start to feel better. For some people, they might be stuck in depression for a really, really long time, or even denial. But I think finding meaning, it gave me that purpose. So for me, I think even writing this book was a part of finding meaning.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I wanted to ask. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So my dad and I think I've shared this before, we were really close. And he was the one who introduced me to writing, to books. And he said, you know, if you fall in love with books, you'll never be alone. And even though I'm an extrovert, you know, I need days when I just need to be. And both my husband and I, we love books. So finding meaning was about that. Like, how do we add, you know, this has happened. When people say grief goes away, I really don't believe that. It takes different forms, shapes, and the intensity might change over a period of time. It might transform or reshape itself, but never really goes away, whether it's the end of a friendship or the loss of a loved one or losing your home or a job. There was a relationship. And if you've invested yourself in something emotionally,
if it meant something, yeah.
Yeah, how do you just get over it? So I think the 6th stage to me is also helps you transform your grief. Or, you know, you're looking to make sense of why something happened. Sometimes there are no answers. You will look for the answers. That's part of grieving. For me, it almost felt like energetically, I was able to take that pain and put it into something like this book. And my dad really wanted me to normalize. He was a feminist. So he was an engineer by day and poet by night. You could see him.
And a feminist by the weekend.
Yeah, feminist by the weekend. He was an active Rotarian. So you could see him at social marches, all of that. So he introduced this life philosophy that you can be both. You don't have to be one or the other. You know, like you have to do good for others, just not yourself. And he would say, we need to talk about normalizing grief because there is so much of taboo. You know, there's so much of shame. There's so much of discomfort. And some people do overdrink, some overeat, some cheat on their partners, some get abusive. And that's all a form of unexpressed grief, whatever grief means to each person. So I just felt like I took that grief and I, you know, gave it meaning. And he was this person where even today, all his friends or colleagues or his Rotarian family will tell me, like, you know, if there was a problem, he was the go-to guy. So I feel this book represents him. It's not pedantic, but it is still helping people, like holding their hands and telling them these are 108 tips. And, you know, he was known for his brutal honesty. So it also has that, like, you know what? No, you don't have to love me every second. I'm grieving. I have these sides to me. And if you're honest, you'll agree you did have those sides as well.
But as he very wisely said, you can be both. So you can like live in that duality of like, I have this side of myself that comes through grief and it is part of my experience of life, but there's also all of these other things on the other side. Like I am still these things I was before, or I'm still kind, or, you know, I can still experience joy even if there's such depth to my sadness and sorrow right now. So like to remember that we can be both is probably also very helpful as we go through grief.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for a lot of people at the start, when they, you know, throw themselves into work, and I mean, literally throw themselves into work, and they are not thinking as much about the person they've lost, you know, whether it's an end of a relationship or through death or whatever have you, there might be guilt. Like, oh, am I not missing them enough? And I want to take this opportunity to remind people, like, there is nothing called enough. You know, everyone shares a different relationship with the people we've lost or shared. And everyone has a different coping mechanism. So you are doing the best that you can. But it's equally important to recognize, like, if you're feeling unwell or you've lost your appetite. In the beginning, you know, we all lose our appetite because food is not something you're thinking. But if you haven't showered in like weeks or you're not hungry, it's equally important to talk to a professional about it, because don't take that pressure on. We don't need to be our own healers.
Yeah. There's two things in this that I want to come back to. One is that sense that grieving's supposed to look a certain way, right? Like, we have a picture of what it is. And in the book, you talk about that there's not such a thing as unhealthy grieving. And I think some people are afraid of grief because they're afraid of the quote unquote unhealthy side that they think it's going to look like. Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. So I think one of the things is, I feel we cannot add a timeline to grief. I mean, we can say 3 weeks from now, I will not think a certain way. It's very hard to do that.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Literally, like, I wish I were you if you've managed to crack that code of healing. But at the same time, it's important to recognize that we can take small steps. If there is a person who feels like a kapha imbalance, a lot of attachment, you know, also kapha imbalance could look like hoarding. And I don't mean just in terms of materialism, also emotions. Holding on to all of those emotions, not wanting to let go, not moving, that can also lead to, you know, weight gain. So it's all clinginess, right? Everything is all about attachment. So that's where it's realizing something can get unhealthy. So how you feel is not unhealthy, because this is who you are. These are the traits you have. If you don't deal with them, that becomes unhealthy, like a pitta imbalanced person, right?
It will lead to a result that is less healthy.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it starts with, you know, where Ayurveda talks really a lot about the mind-body connection. You know yourself best. So pay attention to how things feel. Yes, you're going through a funeral and, you know, a wake and whatever have you. It's fine you're not paying attention. But like a week later, start paying attention. Are you really getting that third glass of wine every night? Are you really ordering in desserts? Are you just never cooking and, you know, eating whatever food is not the best for you? Now that is unhealthy. But if you have the mind-body connection, you'll say, yeah, I'm doing that. Maybe I need to get help. I can't do this on my own. Maybe I need to talk to someone. It could be something as simple as maybe I need a workout accountability buddy, or saying I need to talk to a therapist or an Ayurvedic doctor or whatever modality you believe in. And it can become unhealthy if we let go of the mind-body connection and don't pay attention to what are our triggers, what are our patterns, you know, what are our habits.
Yeah, so it starts with that self-awareness, that reconnecting, and then I hear that grief requires self-care.
And that self-care can happen only when there's self-love.
Mm.
That self-love and that self-care becomes sustainable if it's built into our daily living. It's not a spa day.
Yeah, that's not going to do it. Yeah.
That's not going to do it. And whether or not you're grieving, like, self-care has to be sustainable. Even if it's an Epsom salt bath, it has incredible results in terms of releasing stress from the body, relaxing your nervous system. Healing is on a cellular level. So the superficial level, I know of people whose friends just ghosted them. And I shared one example after they lost a loved one. So if your self-care is dependent on something external, so here you're grieving one loss and then you're grieving the loss of friendships. Imagine how terrible it is. If our self-love is in place and the self-care is about turning inward and asking yourself, what is it that you need? Yes, having those friends to go out to dinners with, I'm all for it. Like, you know, that's a bonus. But that can't be a pillar of your self-care. And also self-care, Erica, when you think about it, it's not just emotional, physical, and mental. It's also financial. Imagine you've lost a job. Like, can you really afford going to the Four Seasons?
For a spa day. Yeah.
For a spa day. So how are you taking care of yourself? And then if that is the only understanding, that rigidity or that boundary, for me, self-care is just going to that really high-end spa, then you'll never be able to take care of yourself because life will keep happening. So on a daily basis, what can you do? It could be 10 minutes of journaling in the morning, right?
Yeah. So we talked about self-awareness. We talked about mind-body connection. We talked about self-care in a really asking yourself what you need kind of way. What other actions or tools can we lean into when we want to start navigating our grief? What are some things you can recommend to play with?
I love that you asked that because I think communication is key. When we're grieving, there's so much going through our mind and our hearts. Ayurveda will tell you, like, this is heart is also a seat of consciousness, right? So there's just so much going on. And sometimes there might be a disconnect between the two. And we expect people to understand.
We barely understand it ourselves. And yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think even in the closest of relationships, whether it's a partner, a friend, a child, a family member, trying to convey what you need or just even saying, I don't know what I need. So just be patient. I think once we say that, because, you know, we don't know what the other person is dealing with. And that's where a lot of troubles, like I feel like relationships can really go down the wrong, you know, like a rabbit hole or down the wrong path, because neither person has really understood what the other person needs. And they're personalizing everything that's happening in that given space. But if we actually sit down and say, hey, I really don't know what I need, but I'm going through this really hard phase right now. Can you just be patient? And if that person is dealing with something else and they say, you know, I might not be the best person for you, then it's up to them to figure out what that relationship looks like. But I think instead of making assumptions, communicate, right? Or people don't understand. No, people really don't understand.
Help them.
Yeah, help them. I didn't know what it felt like to be an adult orphan because I was still going to India every 4 months. I was seeing him, helping him. I still had a home. It's now that I'm like, when I look at my friends or cousins who've lost both their parents, I was like, oh, crap, you don't know who you are. So that compassion from others when we set up these expectations, but also in the workspace. And again, we have a lot of work to do in the world in general, in workplaces, acknowledging what grief can do. I hope the numbers of billion-dollar losses can start making a difference to the decision makers. But even talking to your manager and saying, you know, I've just dealt with this. Can I get a flexible work schedule for, like, just say for a month, work more remotely, or, you know, can I have my camera off when we're doing Zoom meetings? Like simple things, right? Talking to your team about them and just communicating. Because a lot of people, when they don't express, people start walking around them on eggshells. If they're not focused, if they're not productive, they might get laid off if they haven't. And that's the world we live in, right? Including people, talking to HR and asking them, are there some policies in place or could you do something for me? The important part is to communicate. At least you tried.
And I also think the more you communicate it, the more you talk about it, the clearer you're going to get on what it is you're experiencing and what you need. Like sometimes just to try to put into words, it brings that clarity. So that also is helpful. And it might also help you let go a little bit as you get clearer on what you're experiencing. You get more self-understanding and a bit less gripping that we were talking about with that kapha energy, like kind of being able to release a little bit because you're already starting to release with your words and your voice. Like you're talking about it, you're acknowledging the fact at the very minimum.
Oh, absolutely. And I think in a workspace environment, it takes away the performative aspect of the personality. You know, like, oh, I need to be this. No, you don't. We just assume so much in the world has changed. And like I said, I am an optimist. So at least try communicate with those handful of people and let them know this is what I'm dealing with. Again, when I started writing social media posts, but even before the book happened, I had psychiatrists and therapists reach out to me and they were like, you know, but I'm not sharing this as a comment, but I'm sending you a DM because, you know, they need to be aware of what their clients are reading. Like you've given us permission to grieve our losses because as mental health professionals, I've been through a loss, but I've been told compartmentalize because you have to help patients. But as a practitioner, you're more empathetic if you've processed your own grief. So, I mean, communication could be something as it gives people permission. On a personal level, my own friends have told me, like, you know, who lost their parent or a sibling or a partner early on in life. And they were like, you talking about this gives us the permission to talk about our loss. Because I was telling them, you're carrying this heaviness within. And that heaviness is kapha. Building these habits that could be aggravating your vata, which is high anxiety, or your pitta, which is so much of anger that one day it turns absolutely toxic.
Those are such good reminders. I'm kind of taking it all in for a second before I ask my next question. The last thing I wanted to talk about is something you mentioned earlier in the beginning of the conversation, and it was about honoring the lost. And part of it we've talked about in the meaning, but we've also talked about in like why you wrote this book. How do we keep their spirit alive? How do we continue to honor these people and also have that both sides, right? Like we're grieving, And we're honoring their life through that grief in a way, but also there might be other things we can do over time that are not anchored in the sadness and the sorrow and the loss, that are still honoring their presence in their life and what, you know, they brought to us.
Oh, absolutely. I'll share an example. When my dad's birthday, I was supposed to be in India with him for his birthday. And all of this happened. So obviously,
no celebration.
Yeah, no celebration. So, but my dad's sister, my aunt was here. She was visiting. So for his birthday, and he would oftentimes visit us in New York for his birthday. He loved spending his birthday here. We did a little gathering, dinner gathering with the cousins and my aunt and my uncle. And apparently he had gifted her a beautiful sari the year prior, 2 years prior. And she was like, I never got to show him the sari that he bought me for his anniversary. So, you know, I brought her to my altar in my office space and I was like, there's this photograph. Let him know you want it. It's energy. I said, I'm not talking about other kind of stuff. I'm just saying it's energy, right? World is made up of energy. It's physics. So somewhere that energy, it's left this realm, this energy is somewhere else. You feel like you conveyed to your brother how much you appreciate your gift. So, you know, doing that, or like on my mom's birthday, we always go out or cook her favorite meals. You know, same thing for my father-in-law. You know, he loved this hot sauce, green Tabasco sauce. So I went and bought a bottle of hot, you know, green Tabasco sauce. You can get it in India. But when my husband was visiting his mom, I sent a bottle of green Tabasco sauce. I said, I want you to keep this in the refrigerator. So we all have one in our homes in his honor. Then, you know, you could like volunteer, donate. And, you know, when people think donation, yeah, you know, not all of us can afford naming a building after the people we loved and who are gone, or a bench. Like even donating $50 to a cause that mattered to them. You know, typically I've done big book launches and people are like, what book launch are you doing? I'm actually doing a reading at a senior center on the day the book comes out. I said, for me, this is the way to honor my father, my mother, and my father-in-law. So connecting with other elderly who have their other griefs that they're dealing with and may might not have many people to talk about. You know, cook your favorite meals, light up a candle, buy flowers. And you know, that duality exists. And some people feel guilty. Am I over it? Great if you are, but you're over it in that moment.
And that aspect in that way, like it's multifaceted. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the duality, like how beautifully you said earlier, you know, it, grief doesn't always have to be sad. It's just acknowledgement. And sometimes it's also that joy. And it's okay to not feel guilty, you know, when you feel that joy. Because when you love someone, you love different sides to them. Like my dad was always in a rush. So when we crack jokes, if someone is, oh, he's channeling inner dad, or if someone overordered food, I was like, oh, you're channeling inner dad. So, you know, also like that humor.
Yeah. There's a playfulness.
There's a playfulness. Or even when other people tell me stories about my dad and they try and tell me, but you know, like he was your dad. I said, but he was also your friend. It's okay. We can both grieve. There's no comparison. We can hold space for each other's grief. So just holding space is honoring them.
That's true.
You know, there's love. There's love should be shared. And what a fortunate man. There's so many people grieving him.
Oh, so beautiful. Anything else you want to add before we finish today? If there's one takeaway you'd like listeners to leave this conversation with, what would that be?
You know, grief is not linear. Your journey is unique. Don't apologize. Don't overexplain. Don't justify. But if you feel something feels off, do talk to a professional. I mean, I offer one-on-one coaching, but you know, it doesn't have to be me. Healing is about what feels right to you. Talk to a mental health professional, talk to your doctor. There is no shame in grief and there's no shame in seeking help, because healing is a universal phenomena and we all need healing. And people who actually go out and say, I need help, are brave, they're courageous, and they're healing their families and communities. Because, you know, when broken people walk around, they pour their brokenness into the world, and that's hurting us more.
I will put all your information in the show notes if people want to ask more questions or they want to work with you in some capacity. In the meantime, where's the best place for them to go to find you or find your work?
So my website, which is shwetavikram.com, that's SWETAVIKRAM.com. And I'm sure Erica will share.
We're going to link it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Instagram. I am very active on there and I share some fun food recipes too.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today. This was a lovely conversation.
Thank you, Erica. And thank you to everyone who's tuning in.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you haven't already done so, leave a review for this podcast on iTunes. I promise it really, really helps me, and it helps other people that are looking for this type of content. If you'd like to help someone that's on their grief journey and that is struggling right now, by leaving a review, you can really make a difference in their life. You'll find the show notes for today's episode at ericabelandra.com/219. If you want the links or anything that we've talked about as a reference, you'll find it there. And before you go, I just want to say a last thank you to the growing team behind this podcast, as without them, it wouldn't be possible. And that includes all our premium members. Since I decided to keep this podcast ad-free, you are making it happen. Once again, thank you for listening. I'll see you next Monday.